Good afternoon. Welcome to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Leah Drost.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
And we are here to entertain you. Well, that was a new one. I didn't say, hey, thanks for tuning in. We got a great show. But we do. We will have an amazing show for you. My old friend Whitney Scala is back. We're going to talk real estate and real estate law, and nobody can make real estate law as interesting as Whitney. I got to tell you. Guy's got a great brain for real estate and the law, and he makes it so fascinating. You're just going to be all a shiver with his information in just a second.
A shiver,
yes.
You're really dating yourself with that word.
I'm all a shiver. Well, before we get to I've been working on this idea, right? I want a jingle to our phone number.
Right.
And Leah?
That's where Leah comes in.
You're working on that jingle, aren't we, Leah?
It's in the process. I just started mapping it out. It's officially done.
So you know what the number is, right? 303.
303.
814.
814. 8184.
8184. Yeah, and you're doing it because you are a singer.
I am. I'm in a band called Taking on Towers. We're actually playing at the Hard Rock Hotel.
Get a shameless promo in.
What?
Get a shameless promotion.
There was nothing shameless about that.
Yeah.
I like that.
So where are you playing?
Hard Rock Hotel in San Diego. So we don't know the exact time yet, but we're going to be finding out the day before.
Sometime before 2 a.m.?
Yeah, seems about right. Yep.
Can we get backstage passes?
What?
Do we get backstage passes?
Of course. Yeah.
And we get to meet the singer?
They're all set for all of you guys.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
All right. So you're going to have a jingle for us soon.
Soon.
Ready,
yeah.
Let's
Maybe
practice.
Not. I don't know.
You should debut the jingle on stage at the Hard Rock.
That's it. We'll be there.
Yeah.
See if anybody calls it.
What?
You see if anybody calls it. 303.
303.
814.
814.
8184.
8184.
And nobody has any idea why we're telling them that number, right?
No, they're going to have to find out maybe tomorrow, this week. So.
Oh, wow. How cool.
Yeah.
So when are you going to be at the Hard Rock again?
This Friday. It can be anywhere between 8 p.m. to 2 a.m.
8 p.m. One drink or 10 drinks in, you're going to be there somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. You might as well come for the whole thing. There's going to be other bands performing as well, so not just Taking on Towers. And you can also find us on Facebook.
There she goes.
Oh, shameless plug.
I'm working that in, you know? Got us, you know, check out our music. It's really good. So,
will you still talk to us someday when Leah's like a big name? When everybody just calls you Leah like Madonna, you know, you don't even have a last
plot
name.
Plot twist, you're interviewing me.
Yes.
You're taking on time.
Don't forget us when you're big and famous.
There we go.
Yeah.
Leah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Work on that. Whitney Scala is with us. I don't know how you're going to follow that, Whitney.
I'm not nearly as interesting as Leah. If it gets a little slow with me, we'll just get back to Leah.
Back,
yeah.
Right?
She's fascinating.
You are an attorney.
Yeah.
Since 1983.
I practice real estate and business law. I form a lot of entities, and there's a lot of overlap in those areas. So, for example, I help people with major office leases. I help people with buying and selling real estate. I help people with forming the entities that'll hold that real estate. And then I help people run their businesses. And right now, in fact, the largest deal on my desk happens to be what we call a private placement, where I'm helping an exciting company that's trying to grow, helping them accept a $5 million investment. And that's been pretty fun.
Wow. Now, you're making that investment yourself or somebody else doing it?
Yeah, I just put it on my credit card.
How do you help a company accept money? I would just say
it's complicated. It's more complicated than you think because those investors have a number of preconditions to
Wait
their
a minute,
investments.
If they didn't want to get paid back, it'd be a lot easier, wouldn't it?
Well, it's not a loan. What they want to do is grow that company and everybody make
money. But they want something back on it.
They hope for the growth that this company certainly has the capability of doing. So.
And here's the interesting thing. Everything that you said sounds really boring until something goes wrong. And then it's not so boring anymore when you set it up right.
You know what? I would tell you.
You find it interesting even if things don't go wrong?
I would tell you you've got it all wrong.
Uh-oh.
I love what I do. It's amazing the place that attorneys sometimes have with people on a personal level. Every transaction I work on, there's something in motion, both professionally in the office and personally in my in the person who's my direct contact. That person, and that's primarily because I represent small and mid-sized companies, so that the folks I'm talking to are usually the founders. But those people, when they come to me, they are looking either to take their dream to the next level, and they've got some hurdles. They're in some sort of transition upward, or during the tougher times, and this is really difficult to be a part of, but they're in transition downward. And as a lawyer, if you're a good listener, if you're somebody who has pretty decent people skills, a lot of times those clients will turn to you and start talking to you about the personal stuff as well as the professional stuff. They're looking for somebody who's a little outside their normal circle, somebody other than a friend or someone they go to church with or somebody they see on a number of different levels. And they're sharing, and they know you have the capacity to help solve problems, and they're sharing things with you. And that's a very special place to be with people.
You make it sound like it's almost a spiritual journey for you.
It is.
It's not boring at all.
I absolutely sometimes refer to it as ministry. It absolutely is, because I'm in a place where I've been invited, and I'm having a conversation that I know that person is not having with other people. And that to me is a great honor. That's really, I know I'm supposed to be a little more wonky about the law than that, but that's to me the most exciting thing about what
I do. I'm
not sure
that passion is something you ever want to give up. Whitney Scala is with us. He's an attorney here in the San Diego area, talking about his practice and something that you, I made a joke that when you do contracts, it must be boring work unless something goes wrong. But what I hear you saying is that there's a lot more that goes into the decision-making process than just somebody telling you, I want to form a corporation or I want to form a company, and you give them a contract to sign.
You know, one of the biggest challenges with the younger generation, the young people out there, one of the biggest challenges
is
that they're accustomed to retail relationships in so many aspects of their business career and of their personal life. So, for example, when they're looking for an attorney, they want to shop me, which you're entitled to do, but they want to know how much I'm going to charge. They want to know how long it's going to take. And frequently, when I talk about the benefits that I have to bring in terms of maybe a bigger picture package of the tool set of advice, maybe what I have to offer is a long-term relationship, those things don't necessarily resonate. And so the kind of thing you're talking about is a frustration of mine with younger clients.
And I want to hear more about that when we get back. Whitney Scala is with us. He is a real estate business law professional here in Southern California. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Stay with us, folks. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Want a podcast of the show? Of course you do. Go to www.espn1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And you do that so well. I just know that people hearing your voice are running, not walking, to their computers to download the podcast, which isn't there quite yet, but it will be.
Oh, it's not up yet?
We're done doing the show.
Oh, you mean today's it? Yeah, today. I thought you meant we weren't putting them on.
No, 30 minutes after.
We're not really plugged in.
Nothing's really happening here. It's just the podcast, right?
Everything's just in my mind anyway.
It's a happy place, right, Aaron?
The world's a stage. Whitney, before we went to break, we were talking about your practice and kids these days and a whole bunch of stuff going on. But before we move further, we should probably give out information in case somebody wants to contact you. How should they get a hold of you?
Well, you can find it. You can certainly find me on the internet. First name is Whitney and last name is Scala, S-K-A-L-A. And honest to goodness, I can give you my website. It's scala-apc.com. But if you just Google my name, you'll get there eventually anyway.
It's kind of cool to have a name that lots of other people don't have. I mean, like Bob Ryan. I mean, come on. That's like, Everybody's named Bob Bryan now.
There's actually another Bob Bryan on ESPN.
I know. Isn't that funny? And he's always in trouble.
Always in trouble.
So you probably don't run into a lot of other Whitney Scalas, do you?
I run into one every day.
No way. Just you.
In the mirror?
Yeah.
Whitney Scala Jr.
Ah. Seriously?
Yep. My 30-year-old son.
Wow, and you still talk.
Yeah.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, he comes over, helps with the crossword puzzle, gets us out of jams.
Is he following your footsteps as an attorney?
No, he's in real estate, as a matter of fact. He works in Point Loma for a small company called the Greenwald Company, and there's only six people in that office, so they're very hands-on when it comes to managing and investing their own money.
So you were talking before we went to the break a little bit about your philosophy of working with clients and helping them. It's more of a spiritual journey for you than it is necessarily a transaction. You don't sound like you do transactions as much as you fill the position of trusted advisor for people, correct?
Right. And it's the transaction that kind of opens up that moment, to be honest. You know, you don't bump into that opportunity to be a trusted advisor when you're just filling in some gaps, when somebody says, hey, our company needs some employment agreements. We've been using kind of a bad version. Can you help us out? That's not the moment where you're going to build a trusted advisor relationship. I do that work. I love that work. And anything else folks need. But it's the transaction that where you know something's going on 9 out of 10 times, and it's going on with the company, and it's frequently going on with the founder or chief officers.
Now, real estate happens to be at the core of so many businesses and so many functions. I know with the internet now, real estate doesn't have to be part of a business model to work. But for most businesses and people, real estate's a part of their lives somewhere along the way, correct?
Right. And, you know, we sort of promoted that as a policy when the SBA grants loans to companies so that they can buy their own premises, and you can put those you can put that real estate and that SBA loan into a separate LLC, for example, and it owned by the same folks who own the business itself. But that model certainly promotes real estate ownership on behalf of companies. And what's really interesting is how many instances for small, medium, and large companies, they start off as the company that they are making something or providing some service, whatever. And after 10 or 20 years, what they really are is a real estate company.
Right.
Why is it important for a company to separate its real estate from the business itself?
Yeah, well, one reason is because you might want to end up selling the business and you want to hang on to the real estate. If you've been a successful business person and you hit age 55, 60, you want to sell your business, you may want to hang on to the real estate and enjoy a $5,000 to $10,000 a month rent check. The other thing is you may want ownership in those two groups to head in different directions. When it comes to your company, you might want your CFO to become a 10% owner. You might want your chief operating officer to become a 10% owner. But when it comes to the real estate itself, that might be something you want to hang on to, just you and your family. And so putting those in two different entities is a great idea. One more reason is if, heaven forbid, something befalls the company and their fortunes head south, you've still got the real estate separately. So if the company has to go into bankruptcy, that's not going to affect your ownership of the real estate.
And oftentimes it bails people out. I mean, a friend of mine owned a couple of Ace Hardwares down in South Bay. Home Depot came in. No market for Ace Hardware where he was anymore, but he owned the real estate.
It's amazing.
That he did okay after all.
So
right?
It can almost act as a hedge sometimes if the other parts of your business aren't doing so well.
There's plenty of law firms who were in Little Italy, and then they crept up to Bankers Hill and the Hillcrest area, and they own their real estate, and voila, there you are, you know, waking up 10, 20 years later, a few of our historic runs around here that we have in real estate. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, yes, something you bought for maybe $500,000 is worth $1.2 million. There's your 401k.
Now, without getting too far off track, because I know we have a lot to talk about, but what's happening to the Chargers in the stadium?
Yeah.
I mean, are you following that real estate? Because that's a big real estate transaction, right?
All right. Well, there's
a big one.
You know, it's definitely an Olympic sport to cover, to follow every nuance of what's going on in Mission Valley. But I just have this thought, and that thought is that, you know, we're asking taxpayers to become real estate investors there, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's really what's going on. And in terms of a football stadium, which if you remember, every diagram you've ever seen of that site, it always has room for an NFL-sized football stadium. All right, so if you're a real estate investor and you're being asked, hey, are you in on a football stadium? The question really is, well, how do you feel about that market in 15 years? Let's just use that as a, I mean, because we know a stadium lasts 20, 30 years. So I'm looking for kind of a midpoint there where the stadium's still plenty usable. You're not going to knock it down yet. You haven't really amortized that expense. Is that where you want to be? A 60 to 70 seat stadium. And, you know, I question that a little bit.
Are you thinking because we might not have a football team
at that time? I'm thinking that even if we did, is NFL football going to be as popular and to be able to support the model that the 60 to 70,000 seat stadium implies, right? You don't have to have a sport that's run out of business. You just have to have a sport or anything. You know, NASCAR is suffering a little bit. You just have to have something that's about 10 to 20% off from its
peak. And
that's
a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. If you're counting on skyboxes, for example, and you have 20 skyboxes, and in normal times, you maybe have three or four that are empty anyway, so you've got 16 filled, and you drop that by 20%, well, now you dip down to 13. And I'll bet you that puts a serious crimp in that model. And remember, with something like football, there's so little that's scalable. You can't field a 30-person football team. You've got to field a 45-person football team with another 15 guys over here and another bunch of coaches running around.
And there's only so many hot dogs 60,000 people are going to buy, only so many parking
spots.
Right. So you can't scale it up to tens of millions.
The NFL's certainly trying.
Yeah.
You know, and every sport's trying. But I'm just cautioning. And so
hold that thought. We're going to get back to football and the future of San Diego in Whitney's hands. What do you think? Whitney Scully.
If Leah let us, then we'll talk about that.
She's in charge, the boss.
Awesome.
Leah. You're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. You're listening to us on ESPN, 1700 AM. But did you know you can watch us too? Visit us on our Facebook page, Biz Talk Radio. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan, and we're coming to you from the ESET Studios. Glad to have you with us today. If you missed the first part of the show, you missed Leah.
You'll have to go back and listen to our podcast.
Yeah, you'll have to listen to the podcast because she's amazing. Although she hasn't done the jingle yet, she will. Right?
I told you, it's in the process. I'm mapping it out.
Okay.
It's going to be ready soon.
All right. So we're counting on the jingle coming up. We have no idea what we're going to use it for, but we're going to have a jingle on this show. Whitney Scala is with us, and thank you for being here, Whitney.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bob.
Yeah. Kind of nice to work with you.
Enjoying the afternoon.
Yeah, I know. It gives a little lightheartedness to the talk of the real estate in San Diego. You were talking about the stadium and what it might look like in 15 years, depending upon what happens with the pro team that we have in,
right,
if we even have one at that point in time, right?
So I'm talking about it from the standpoint of a real estate person, you know, where I'm thinking about useful life of the facility. I'm thinking about the probable market out there in 15 years. And so I'm just questioning whether an enormous stadium is a wise place for a long-term investment. I like the smaller stadium, and I think that the smaller stadium has more diverse uses. I think it's a fabulous venue for football. I think San Diego State would love this, would find a lot of success in a smaller venue, and we'll all get a chance, those of us who aren't too grumpy, to see how that works out this fall when we go up to Carson. Up to Carson and check out the StubHub Center, where the Galaxy plays soccer. About a 20,000 seat stadium, but that's where the Chargers are going to play this fall.
So you are talking about an MLS stadium then potentially? I know there's been talk of it here in San Diego.
Yeah, well, a lot of the plans show an MLS sized stadium, which could also accommodate
MLS
football.
MLS means
Major League Soccer.
Major League Soccer
yeah.
size. Okay.
I mean,
this is a sports stadium. Right?
I wrote an article about 6 or 7 years ago, and it appeared in the Cutting Edge Peninsula Beacon.
Woo.
But I did say, that was back when we were talking about the Chargers maybe moving up to Escondido. And I said, if that's going to happen, let's build a small stadium down in East Village. And that indeed is where we ended up talking about. And what was the biggest complaint? It was a complaint about the massive size of an NFL-sized stadium. I wondered out loud in my article whether maybe a smaller soccer stadium like you see all over Europe and like you now see MLS building all over America, 20 to 30 to 35,000 seats. I said, maybe San Diego State could play there. Maybe an MLS team could play there. And maybe we could get a Mexican League soccer team there. You know, we have U.S. teams that go down south of the border and play.
I think a lot of purists just covered their ears and they're screaming.
No,
the NFL plays games over in Europe now too. They play in London.
Why can't the Mexican League have
a
franchise?
What happens to having a big name football team in San Diego?
No, I'm not. Remember, the context of that article was when the Chargers were talking about going to Escondido.
So they were going to be taken care of.
I wasn't running them out of town. So they were going to be taken care of. The MLS season runs basically a different time of year as the Mexican League season, if I understand right. And so you'd probably end up having 50 or 60 dates.
So do you have a deal in the works that you haven't told anybody about? Because this sounds like a pre-announcement to something cool.
Well, I think what we're doing is we're taking that concept de facto, and we're going to see it explored with the Mission Valley site.
Whether
MLS comes on board, whether we really finish up that
are
way,
the proposals
whatever.
Made public? Have you seen them? Can people look at what's being proposed? And are you involved in any of them, or you're just
I'm not involved. I'm just I'm interested and opinionated.
Yep. So downtown San Diego's downtown is probably one of the better downtowns in the United States. As I travel around the United States, you don't see too many as cool as downtown.
You know what? There's a lot of fabulous things to say about our downtown, and I noticed you keep introducing us as the ESET.
ESET Studios, yes.
Yeah. And so I think they're located downtown.
They are.
Their name's on a building, and I applaud that. I think we're losing a lot of service industries out of downtown. That's been a traditional downtown tenant. So I worry about not just the downtown office space being full, but I worry about the downtown culture and whether it's the kind of culture that's going to support other traditional downtown institutions like our symphony and our opera and other theater. A lot of the newer tenants are at a different place in their career path and maybe at a different place in their marketing ideas. And so the notion of giving $10,000 so your company's name can be on the symphony, maybe that doesn't work for their company. Maybe that doesn't work for them personally. And that's the kind of vacuum I'm worried about creating.
Do you think it's a technology thing or an age thing or both?
Well, I think it's more of a company structure thing where, you know, I'm in law. We market and network typically by joining the boards of institutions. You know, where you go to a hospital or a library or whatever, there's always a couple attorneys. There's always a couple accountants. There's always a couple other professional firms on there. And that's how we market traditionally. But if you're a tech person, maybe you're marketing on the internet. Maybe you're marketing to a different audience.
It
may not be local. And so we were talking earlier, for example, about we were going to talk about restaurants somehow. Oh, how do people choose the best restaurant?
Yelp.
I was going to say how I choose the restaurant I want to go to. Who hires the most high school kids? Who sponsors the most youth soccer teams? That's what I want to know. I want to know about their commitment to the fabric of the community. I'm not saying that's better or worse. I'm saying it's different and has its own importance. And it's easy to overlook the erosion of that to the establishment of something different.
You know, being a real estate attorney gives you a lot of insight. Seriously. I mean, you're talking about things that, like, city fathers would talk about, but you're naturally a part of that because of your involvement in the real estate community.
That is another really cool thing about my career. I have a front row seat on so much interesting stuff. And because I have to market, I have to get clients, and it's a personal decision, right? For what I do and at the level I do it, it's not really an internet presence. There's no SEO that's really going to help me. I need to be out there. So it drives me to get out there, and I'm so fortunate it does, because I have to go to stuff and get smart about it. I have to meet people and get smart about who they are, and the result turns out to be fabulous.
What's the best part of real estate in Southern California right now? We're running out of time. We're coming to the end. What do you think is the coolest thing people ought to be looking at in real estate in Southern California right now? From any perspective.
Well, if you're an investor, I would always keep it boring. I'd get
three bedroom, two bath, single family residences.
I'd get a warehouse that someone like Amazon wants to use as a fulfillment center.
Warehouse.
That's the kind of stuff I would do.
That doesn't sound boring. That sounds exciting, but maybe we could make it boring. I don't know. Whitney Scala, thank you so much. Whitney Scala is the name to talk to if you have anything in real estate you need help with. You're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
And you can also talk to Whitney about all your other business needs too, right?
And your personal stuff.
And your personal stuff.
Yeah, just
He's
give
a
me
therapist
call.
Here too as yeah. well. Don't go anywhere, folks. We're going to be right back.